This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. Unfortunately, not too much football, not too much Norwich City to actually talk to you about in these strange times, but we wanted to have a catch up with you guys. We'll do our best to keep in touch with you during the sort of, no, it's not quite a lockdown at this stage, is it? But the coronavirus health precautions and restrictions, it's lots of things to take in at the moment. So we firstly thought we would keep things in football context. I am your host, Dave Freezer. We're also coming to you on Future Radio 107.8 FM. I am not alongside, but digitally, virtually connected from various different parts of Norfolk to Tony Thrussell, Paddy Davitt and Connor Southwell. Fellas, how are we doing? How's the working at home?
Bored of it already, Dave. Well, bored of it already. Not happy. Cabin fever. Was it day three, day four? Never do I miss your smiling faces more in the office than now. So, yeah, it's obviously, you know, we're trying to bring some normality and, dare I say, humour to it. But we all know how serious the situation is, so that's the way it's got to be. But, yeah, it's just as all of society are finding out, it's a very strange, bizarre, surreal situation. Football's not immune to that, but not the most important by any stretch. But yeah, it's hard to see how it's going to change anytime soon either, which I think if there was an end point in this and we now knew and the scientists and the government could give a bit more clarity, but it sounds like we're just at the start of what could be a very long journey.
Tony, a bit weirder for you in that you're just into a new house, aren't you? Or are you still in your old house at the moment?
No, I'm in the new house now, but it's kind of replicating what's going on in the supermarkets. It's quite bare at the moment. Oh. and obviously you're not wanting to splash money on furniture when you probably should be thinking about other things at the moment. So, yeah, but echoing what Paddy said, you know you're bored when you're wishing you're at Blythe Services on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
And Connor, you're at the Football Manager station, I'm guessing.
Just about, yeah, I'm there. So hopefully I can get on with that later this afternoon, actually, once we've dived through what we need to dive through today. But yeah, I'm in the same boat, really, just hoping to go out at some point and get back into civilization, because it feels a bit like the start of an apocalypse, to be honest, out there at the moment.
Well, we should probably point out as well, we've had a bit of a change. You may have seen on social media that I've moved over to our news team for the time being. I've got 3 years' experience as a news reporter, so it's obviously an unusual time for the EDP and Archon as a media organisation. All our reporters are working from home now, unless there's a good reason not to. Fortunately, from us in sport, we're kind of well set up for that already, because we're kind of used to working from home occasionally and obviously working on the move out and about. So I've had to sort of leave sports desk temporarily. We don't know how long that'll be. Of course, we'll come on to that shortly in terms of Euro 2020 being postponed, becoming Euro 2021, and what that means for the club game. We'll come on to that shortly. But just in terms of sort of being isolated and stuff. I did go into the office yesterday because I needed to have a catch up with our news colleagues about how, you know, what they were expecting from me and catching up with things. And it was a really weird atmosphere in the office. You guys were all working from home, weren't you? But it almost had this sort of a slightly delirious state, like the last day of term at school. Everyone was sort of chatting about this and that and not really sure how to sort of express themselves while, of course, being very busy with stuff. The one thing that we're sort of going to get an insight in this sort of scenario we are now is the isolation almost, isn't it? It's the sort of feeling of being a little bit alone, Pad.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, I don't think any of us have got anything to draw on unless, I don't know, I can think the only thing comparable maybe as a kid, if you had chicken pox or whatever and you wasn't allowed to leave yet. I think my sister had it. I don't think I ever had it, actually. Is that good or bad? I can't remember now.
I had it. Alex Tetty had it not long ago, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
Had it as an adult, and which is incredibly rare.
That is, yeah. But as you say, you know, the usual social norms, even something as should be routine and quite mundane as going to the supermarket, that was like a military operation yesterday. I had to end up going to 3 or 4 different supermarkets, which probably wasn't in the current guidance the best thing to do. But what can you do? You know, you hear reports of, and we all know that the most vulnerable are the elderly in this, so the science and the government tell us. And, you know, you get these anecdotal reports of queues forming at 6 a.m. in the morning of elderly people at supermarkets. It's just, there's a lot of people drawing parallels. And we had the Chancellor yesterday, obviously, with that massive financial package of assistance, and it's all getting drawn. The only parallel that's getting drawn is like we're on a wartime footing now. This was how it was in the Second World War. I was watching Newsnight last night, and to veer off into politics and the sort of the sums that potentially the government could end up having to borrow are basically on a par. The only other parallel was what happened in the Second World War, and you know that underlines that this is not just a UK thing, it's not a Europe thing, this is everybody in the world is now going through this to some degree. And because of that, it's, as you said there, just on a very micro level, you go into an office and it does feel very surreal. But what can we do? We've been given the advice, we just have to follow it and hope that the people who should know a bit more about these things are giving us the right advice and that we do get through it. But to reiterate what I said at the start, you know, I mean, purely we're talking here in football terms, and the Premier League suspension last Friday with the EFL and the FA and Women's League. We'll review it on April the 3rd and 4th. Well, it's not going to happen, is it? Let's be honest, because now you're being told about, you know, until a vaccine becomes clear, we're going to be basically living with this and maybe having to go through periods of self-isolation or social distancing until a vaccine is here. And if there's no vaccine until, I don't know, 12, 18 months. I know there's various countries now saying that they're beginning testing or very exploratory testing, but this is the new reality. We might have to be doing what we're doing to a greater or lesser extent for the next 12, 18 months. And within that context, to bring it back to football, very hard to see where football progresses for me.
Yeah, it feels like quite a leveller almost. You know, you hear that Idris Elba, Tom Hanks, Justin Trudeau, you know, top famous people in the world have been diagnosed with it, and it's such a varying thing as well, so everybody feels like they're in the same boat. And along that theme, with the social distancing coming in, I had a strange Tuesday night because my grandma lives alone in sort of a retirement complex, and her phone had stopped working. She's got sort of early stage dementia, that kind of vibe. She's not been of great health. She has had a couple of small strokes, and we couldn't get in contact with her, which is obviously always concerning. And I live in Sprouse and she lives in Thorpe. My mum's currently stranded in Florida, where they were on holiday, but they're not sure when they're going to get home. And my only other living aunt is down in Suffolk. So she said, can you pop round and check her? And she had been sent a new Wi-Fi router, and it totally confused her. She thought it was like a speaker for her phone and had tried to set it up and basically taken herself offline. So a couple of days she was sort of quite self-isolated. But because of this social distancing, I had to be really careful. You know, I washed my hands when I was in the building, when I got in her flat, obviously no hugs or kisses or anything like that, keeping distance. And as I was driving away, I was like, well, this is the sort of thing, we're all in the same boat in terms of, had I, and in a way, you know, transmitted the virus to my grandma and it was to have the worst effect, imagine how hugely guilty you're going to feel. So this is just the early stages of it, isn't it? We're all, as I say, in the same boat. I then went to Sainsbury's in Thorpe St Andrew, and it was like an apocalyptic scene. I was on the phone to my sister and I was like, oh my word, there's nothing here. There was nothing fresh. And I ended up walking out with the most random basket of shopping, you know, from, because all the staples had sort of gone. So, you know, it was like expensive ham.
Do you know what? I ended up getting two packets of Alpha Bites. I haven't eaten them since I was about eight.
Alpha Bites. Yeah. Well, the one that I found funny, people have sort of panic bought baked beans. They're all gone. But the sugar-free baked beans... we're there.
Right.
What's wrong with sugar-free
beans? You can't make people buy them. I went to Tesco, I think it was on the weekend, and I was specifically on my list. I had orzo, this type of pasta. Went down the pasta aisle, everything was gone except one packet of orzo. So I was in it.
There was, what's the pasta when it's a wholemeal pasta? There was one box of penne wholemeal pasta on the shelves. And all the cheap booze had gone. I thought I'm going to get a bottle of whiskey in for this time. It might be needed if this stretches on. But
I'm seeing packs of Corona piled up by the entrances to a lot of stores as well. So
really?
Don't know if that's subliminal messaging on their part.
I know they're... sales have gone down. I think it's a little bit of fake news, isn't it, that people are not buying it because of an association. I think it's more that they the countries like China and stuff just weren't buying beer in general, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it sort of fitted the narrative. But I think Corona's all right, but you kind of needs a hot day for a barbecue, really, doesn't
yeah.
it?
I think on that note though, the supermarket staff, and I mean, we're in a fortunate position where we can work from
yeah.
home, but I mean, every morning my girlfriend's off to the vets to go work, and
yeah,
I sort of feel quite not guilty, but a bit like a stay-at-home husband at the moment, and getting dinner ready for when she's home, and it's quite therapeutic in a way. But I do feel for those people that are kind of in amongst it every day, aren't they?
That's going to be the next stage, isn't it? My girlfriend works in Norwich City Centre and she works in a clothes shop, and yeah, they're expecting at some point that they're going to close because they're not going to have the business, are they? So anyway, let's bring it round to the football. Euro 2020 cancelled. Connor, you were sort of across this yesterday as things broke, and essentially it's pushed back till next summer, really to give leeway for the clubs. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's definitely to allow the domestic seasons across Europe to be completed, which I think is probably the right move, and probably the move that everyone would want. I'm sort of working up some Tony Mowbray quotes as we speak, and I think his Blackburn Rovers side is perhaps a really pertinent example in how this is affecting people, because people have spoken about a 22-team Premier League, but Blackburn Rovers are a 10th in the Championship and 3 points off sixth, so 3 points off the playoffs essentially for their short promotion. So it just goes to show that it is affecting teams at different levels. So I think whatever conclusion that people perhaps have in their heads, I don't think there's a just way of doing it except for completing the season, and that is what this move has been allowed to do. I think regardless of how long it takes, or if it goes into the summer and we're sitting at Carrow Road in our shorts and sombreros and sunglasses.
Sombreros?
It needs to happen. Well, you know. Exactly, yeah. It needs to happen, doesn't it? Because, I mean, Norwich again are another example of people it can affect, because they can technically finish above Manchester United. It's not going to happen, but mathematically it's possible. So there's still so many variables for me that you can't just either avoid the season and say, right, let's go again. But equally, I don't think you can really say, OK, well, we're going to push these two teams into the Premier League. So that's what the Euros has done. It's essentially freed up the summer, which I'm sure everyone will agree is the sensible and right thing to do.
Yeah, I think that the general vibe is that the clubs now appreciate they've got to get the season done, haven't they? Because it's just going to be a minefield to try and keep everything moving forward from there. There'd be, you know, legal challenges, financial challenges, contracts, all that stuff in the mix would just be so difficult. My concern, I suppose, and from, I think, probably my opinion, I think the most likely thing we're going to see happen is that it's going to be played out behind closed doors and streamed to the nation via via various channels. Pad, what's your sort of reading on the situation?
Well, on that front, I mean, a lot of this, obviously, we're not party to what's going on. There's a Premier League meeting scheduled for Thursday. We're sat here Wednesday morning. And the reality is, you know, a lot of the stuff you're hearing is around that they've got clearly been paid from the broadcast companies for a 38-game season. If that wasn't to happen, then clearly those clubs are probably going to have to give back some sizeable chunks of money. So, sadly, money is at the heart of a lot of these decisions, I'm sure. And if that is the case, then that scenario might have to be the way they go, because I'm sure clubs won't want to lose out on massive amounts of money, which they might not even be able to. You know, there's a lot of talk about clubs overextend themselves at all levels of the game, and Norwich probably aren't one of those, but I think the majority would not be able to kind of budget, or would have budgeted for a full Premier League season. So that's fine, but I don't see how that's possible behind closed doors, for the simple reason that I haven't checked in the last day or two, but I think horse racing went behind closed doors, and I think there was a move now to knock that on the head because of these emergency services that need to be put on even around events like that. You know, if you have if for example, you'd need medical support at football games in case there was injuries for footballers per se, even if there wasn't any crowd there. So I don't see it. I really think we're now in a situation where it's going to have to be radical probably underplays it, but you know, hypothetically, there's no football played before now in June. Then how do seasons get, if you wait for the same player until June the 30th because of the contractual elements? A lot of players' contracts who are running out in this summer are only until June the 30th. I don't see how you can put that in. And then you overlay, well, how do you play the European competitions as well? The UEFA, you know, playoff games. I saw in the UEFA statement that there was still an expectation they could play those in June. You know, the ones where the Norwich guys would have been playing later this month. The Scotch boys, the Northern Irish boys, Slovakia, Republic of Ireland. Far too congested for me if we don't get any football before June that you can shoehorn this into June. So therefore, are you talking about changing players' contracts, changing the play at the summer transfer window? And do we go into July and August? Because I think we're probably going to have to, if there's no other option other than we need to play these remaining games, then fine. But I think that's going to push us way into the summer, because, you know, all the scientific advice tells you that the peak will probably only be May, June anyway. So very hard to see how football resumes, for me, before July.
In terms of full stop because of the players, or are we just talking in terms of fans being able to watch it and, you know, being normal football?
No, in terms of football, full stop, whether it's closed doors or not, I just don't see how that could go on. You know, if the NHS is overwhelmed, if we're seeing it already now, you know, no food in the shops and what have you, you know, you extrapolate these trends 6, 7, 8 weeks down the line, I just think in that context, how can football resume? Football is immaterial. And the only way there'd be people pushing for that is, for me, the top and bottom of it is because of the financial potential downside of not completing seasons. More so the Premier League, because obviously the Football League revenue isn't. But then with the Football League, it's about the gate receipts, isn't it? You know, we've seen numbers of clubs, sadly, job losses already at Barnet. I saw yesterday the non-footballing staff, they won't be the last club. Kings Lynn in our area, I see they've now actually come out. And the story we had earlier in the start of the week, they're now saying they need about 100,000 to tide them through this period, and they're appealing for money. If clubs outside the Premier League, their only revenue source, main revenue source, is gate receipts, then I don't see how that changes, because there's no way fans will be allowed back in the stadia any time in the next, for me, probably 2-3 months. So there's no easy answers. But, you know, maybe there'll be more clarity tomorrow when the Premier League meet. But as I say, I think anything they say will have to be heavily caveated by, we're now in, as UEFA have said, we need to review this constantly, and they will be guided by the science and the transmission rates and sadly the death rates. And, you know, I think everything we're hearing at the minute, this is a long-term problem, and we're going to be dealing with it probably for the next 12, 18 months. So in that context, playing football games in June, I think, is pie in the sky.
Right, well, we'll come on to what's happening at Norwich City in just a few minutes. You and Connor have got a little bit of insight on that front, haven't you?
Yeah.
I should just say, I probably should have said earlier in the show, but please do bear with us in terms of audio quality of the pod. We'll do our best possible, but we are, as I said at the top of the show, we're all in different rooms around the sort of the Norwich area, so we're doing this over a video chat and recording it as best we can. So do bear with us to a certain extent. It's unusual times. I just saw a tweet drop into my Twitter feed, which I thought was quite funny. John Rogers, who I'm sure many of you know, very funny writer, did the Little Yellow Bird podcast, I think it was called, wasn't it? He tweeted, "As much as I understand, it's not their fault, ... Seeing footballers gurning into the camera as they kick toilet rolls about is really pissing me off now." I think I can firmly get on board with that. Like, all the talk about toilet rolls, Tony, in terms of like the panic buying of it. Why have footballers decided to kick toilet rolls around?
Well, yeah, that was exactly my first thought when I saw it. I know it's a bit of fun, but I was thinking, what if they miss kick it and waste that roll? What happens yeah. then?
Straight into the toilet bowl. It's soaked. That's one written off.
Yeah. The neighbours could
benefit. I think as with everything that happens, there's always something that goes a bit viral that these celebrities try and get on board with to spread a message. So I guess you've got to try and look at the message behind it, if there is one. But personally, stick to the ball in the garden, I think.
Yeah. Well, Norwich put out a nice tweet this morning with a picture of Emi Buendia playing with his little son, I think it is, yeah, with his toys and his partner, and likewise Onel Hernandez holding his young baby as well, saying, away from football, it's always important to spend time with your nearest and dearest. As we were saying earlier, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that at the moment, isn't it? You've got to be careful about exactly who you're spending your time with. And, of course, a lot of the Norwich players have put messages on social media. The last I saw was from Tim Krull, who says, "Keep moving and be safe, everyone. Help each other so we get through this crazy time together," with a picture of him doing some individual gym work, which I think is the BAS training, who a lot of the players seem to do work with. Yeah, the social media stuff, actually, Tony, while we're with you... sorry, Connor, we haven't spoken to you for a little while. I'm trying to keep this sort of bouncing between us all. The Leighton Orient social media account manager might just be getting a little upgrade, mightn't he? Because he has managed to create this sort of online FIFA tournament featuring loads of clubs.
Yeah, and it's gone global, hasn't it? I think it's in Australia and Denmark and... Oh, can you...
Might have lost Connor's audio there. Right. Bear with. Have we got you on mute or something, mate?
You muted yourself, Connor.
Just any take your earphones in.
Technical out. Glitch. It's because he's got wireless ones. You can see they're wireless.
What about now? Is that better?
Oh, hello. Oh. I heard you then.
Is that better?
Keep speaking, mate.
Yeah, the only issue now is I haven't got earphones in, so I'm probably going to get all of your audio, but Leighton Orient's Twitter admin, yeah, he's done well, hasn't he? What is it, 128 team tournament, global, I think you've got Australian teams, Irish teams, Russian teams, Norwich as well. I think Todd Cantwell is representing Norwich in that particular tournament, so a bit of fun. It'll keep the supporters engaged with football, I guess, if they can stream it online or give supporters an insight into perhaps or even give them the option of who to play, what formation to play. I think that's a really good idea, actually, and brings a lot of clubs involved in a particular thing that they can get behind at the moment, which I think we all need, because certainly from my speaking, I'm missing that competitive edge from life. I think I'm getting close to sort of cheering the kettle when it boils, so it's not great. But I think that will just help fill up some times. I've seen other clubs have started streaming like old fixtures, so 90-minute games on a certain day every week. So I think there's going to be ways and means of getting a football fix. It might just be a little bit, well, either virtual or a bit of nostalgia as well. So there's going to be a way of doing it, but it's going to be interesting to see, because clubs have got to be creative, and I suppose Leighton Orient have done that, and I'm sure we'll all be rooting for Norwich in that tournament. I think they've got Fleetwood, actually, in the draw last night, so we'll see how Todd gets on with Fleetwood.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, yeah, that's FIFA keeping the players and clubs distracted just for a little while. But, Connor, Paddy, you did actually get a chance to head down to Colney and sort of catch up with what's going on at the club and behind the scenes, didn't you? So, early stages of everything, of course. But, Pad, what was the sort of general vibe?
Well, I mean, basically, DF, one or two of the local media were down there, and Stuart Webber was there, and head of comms, a couple of other representatives from the CSF, the charity partner, the Soul Church, who they do a lot of work with as well, charitable organisation. And really, I think the vibe from Norwich, and without wanting to plug it, we've already done as an organisation, but there's two strands to this story. There's obviously the sad medical aspect of it and what that means for sections of the population, but probably more importantly, and I think that's where we are as a company now, it's protecting our most vulnerable in society, you know, the community aspect. We spoke earlier about, you know, elderly people queuing up to get into supermarkets early hours. You know, the last day or two, the Prime Minister's talking about potentially 12 weeks of isolation for over 70s. And we've got you're probably better served to talk than I am about this, DF, given, you know, you've transferred over. But the Here to Help campaign, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still sort of getting up to speed with it a little bit. Well, it's still being put in place, really, but we're looking at possible ways that we can help in the community, the ways that we can publicise the things that people are doing in the community, and that includes there's a postcard being made available where you can fill out your basic details if you want to then stick it through the letterbox of an elderly neighbour, you know, just as an example. My name's Dave, here's my number. If you need somebody to get you some shopping, or, you know, if you need some milk or sugar or whatever, then drop us a text, give us a call, and we'll do what we can to help out. So just trying to fill that little hole of making sure that the vulnerable aren't being forgotten about, because, you know, my grandma is fortunate that she had a grandson nearby with the story that I told earlier on, who could come round but be careful and get her phone sorted so she's not isolated. Not everyone has that, does that?
Yeah.
Do they? So that's kind of the gist of it.
Yeah, just to come back. Yeah, so that's basically where we were in terms of the football club realised that they are this massively visible entity, you know, one club county, one club city. And it's what can they do? How can they use their presence in the community to really raise awareness, to do what they can? You know, there was talk about setting up food bank sort of dropping off points at the club, and could we sort of do something as a company with that, the collaboration there? Clearly, the players, you know, we've talked about, we've seen one or two bits from the players, but because, you know, if you're a Norwich fan, you're going to probably, as I said in that meeting, you know, with the greatest respect to the Prime Minister, I think you're more likely to heed advice from Tim Krul is telling you something than some government minister. And just can the players be visible, whether it's on social, whether it's actually getting involved with some of the charitable sort of initiatives, and just using the power of the players and their social media reach. And that's really, it's almost joined up thinking was how I left coming away from Colney yesterday. It's just, you know, us, Radio Norfolk, were there, the football club, we're all within Norfolk, very well established, very visible organisations with collectively a huge reach. And what this is all about now is we're all in this together, and can we look out for the less fortunate and the more vulnerable, and anything they can do, I think they're very keen to get on board. And it really just chimes with, I think, how Delia is the figurehead at the boardroom level, and Michael Wynne-Jones, and obviously Stuart since he's come in, and Daniel and the players, you know, they understand their responsibility to the wider community. They're not just a football club. They don't just go out on a weekend or a midweek and look to play to win 3 points and stay in the Premier League or get promoted to the Premier League. They understand their responsibility within Norfolk society, and they're very keen to live up to that, I think, through this period. And it's great to hear because, you know, as I say, I mean, they touched on, you know, they think they have upwards of 6,000 supporters, season ticket holders who are in that over 70 category. What can they do for them as a constituency? How do they reach out to them? How do they make sure that they're all right? You know, it isn't just they see them as a transactional, you know, they turn up on a Saturday, they pay their money and their season ticket and that's it. They're very keen, because we're in these unprecedented times, to do whatever they can as a football club with all their reach and you know, the power that they've got to get messages across, to do what they can. And you know, the fact is they are quite proactive because it was them who initiated this meeting. So we'll see how that develops in time. But you know, it's good to hear, and it probably just reaffirms that at the core of that club, yes, fans probably have their grumbles and their gripes about finances or what have you, ownership occasionally, or too often for my liking, always rears its head. But fundamentally, that is a football club who understand their social responsibility, and that's good to see.
Absolutely, yeah. We're going to need lots of that sort of stuff. Strange times, you know, when every time you look at the EDP website, it's something else has been cancelled. Just before we recorded this podcast, Parkrun, for instance, have just cancelled all their events, which is no massive surprise. It's a gathering of hundreds of people in close quarters on... apart from the ones who roar out at the front and take it seriously and try and get under 20 minutes, it's a close it's a close group of people, so that they've suspended through, and they're not expecting to allow their official events to begin again until after April. So you know, Theatre Royal closing in Norwich because you know, pubs are not sure where they're going with things. It's on a day-to-day, we're having to check up on the sort of things that we are supposed to be doing, aren't we? So in terms of the football then, Connor, what sort of things have we've been working on?
Good question. We've had some stuff from Chris Sutton, to be fair, his view on what he thinks should happen with the leagues, which was essentially he thinks the table should be frozen. He said if there wasn't the money involved that there is and the sort of implications that would have on other clubs, then he thinks that essentially would be the solution. So I think that got quite a lot of attention online yesterday. He's obviously someone who Norwich fans liked as a player, was a very popular player, but he's a very outspoken pundit. So I think with him, you always get something that is going to get people talking or get people interested. Similarly, I mentioned the Tony Mowbray comments, which again are quite interesting because he's sort of on the flip side of that. And as someone who's involved with a club and who's sort of inside of the game, I think that's interesting as well. And then in a completely different dimension, we've got a little bit with Peter Grant on the website as well this morning, which is him sort of reflecting on his Norwich City career in his own words, the mistakes he made and how he perhaps felt that he didn't use his time wisely. He sort of said that he was at the training ground at 6 a.m. in the morning and wouldn't leave until it was dark at night. So it's kind of his regrets about the Norwich job, some advice that Sir Alex Ferguson gave him, obviously resigning to Delia as well and how that situation panned out. So that's quite interesting to get his perspective on that. And we've got plenty of other things bubbling away, some interviews and some chats with various people. So we're getting there. We're getting there. But obviously, as I'm sure everyone understands, this is a dry period and you have to generate stuff. So we're working our hardest to make sure it's original and creative and interesting as well, because I think the last thing people want is, particularly in a period like this when everything is so focused on one subject and perhaps people are looking for a bit of escapism with football, is that we're not just sort of feeding in constantly to the situation. So we've tried to mix it up a little bit and get a good variety of stuff, and I think we've done that so far. So long may it continues, although who knows what it's going to be like in 4 or 5 weeks' time, perhaps if we still haven't seen a ball kicked, which I would say looks incredibly likely.
Okay, and Tony, sort of digitally, we're just encouraging Norwich fans to sort of get involved, really, and we'll come onto this a little bit more in terms of what's keeping you entertained. But yeah,
Tony's been sliding in DMs. as he told you about
as ever.
Yeah, well, as you've probably seen, we're just trying to have a bit more fun with the social media side of things, because obviously, as Connor said, people hearing the same things every day, they're still looking for escapism, which obviously football isn't there at the moment. So yeah, delving into the archives, delving into the vast Archant picture archive, there's plenty of gold in there, and yeah, just trying to come up with new ways to get people talking, not necessarily about what's happening now, but memories from their past. Got a little, not a quiz, maybe like a little competition coming up this week, which hopefully will be something we can do sort of once a week with different themes. But yeah, it's kind of a case of seeing what people are enjoying, what they're getting the most out of, and just trying to put your own spin on it, really. Because, I mean, everyone can play FIFA. We just got to try and think of something else.
Right, well, I should just mention, actually, before I forget, I will put a link to the Here to Help campaign that me and Paddy were talking about a minute ago. I'll put a link to that in the description of the pod, so you can find it easily. But you can find plenty about that on the EDP and Even News websites or in print as well. Okay, looking back on last week's pod, now, obviously, things moved on very quickly. We recorded on... Well, it went out. The pod went out on Thursday, didn't it? And then, obviously, everything completely was turned on its head on Friday when the football season was suspended until April at the earliest. We're all expecting it to be longer than that, aren't we, at this stage? So, we introduced a new feature called the Pin Composer to the new midweek Pinken podcast, which, of course, is sort of a little bit on the back burner for now. We'll essentially try to aim to keep up to date with you with one pod a week. I'll try and remain involved as much as I can. You know, we're sort of in a little bit in limbo as to how long I'll be on news, etc. But the poser was, if there was one game in your life that you attended, one Norwich City game that you attended that you could relive if you were given the opportunity to go back in time, what would it be? I know we did ban Wembley in 2015, the playoff final, because we thought there'd be loads of responses for that one. It was sort of a little bit too on the nose. And we had a couple of responses, but then obviously they got overtaken and we weren't really pushing for responses. So Jamie Reeve agreed with you, Tony, in terms of that 3-2 win over Derby in 2011. The Simeon Jackson, the place is going bananas, as Chris Gorham and Neil Adams said on the radio. And I did have one which is a little bit different from Dave Bishop, who emailed me and said, my Norwich City game to relive would be the home game against Palace on a Tuesday night, 24th of April 1973. Can still see that winning goal going in. Now, I had to check what this one was. So that was the first season that the club had been promoted to the top flight. They'd been promoted in 1972. And that was a 2-1 win against Crystal Palace. 36,000 Norwich fans there, and essentially that win sealed the club's survival in the top flight in the first season, knowing that they'd have a second season there. And it was a late header from Dave Stringer, Mr. Norwich City, or one of the Mr. Norwich City nominees, certainly, who scored a late header, which to that generation is one that has gone down in history. So if you, as we say, things got kind of overtaken a little bit, but if you... would still like to contribute to that, then by all means get in touch with us on social media or drop us an email. But we will set you a new pin composer. We'll keep this going. And the thing to talk about right now is how you're keeping yourself entertained, isn't it? Whether that is a box set, a series, an album, whether you're digging out old books, digging out your old programs, pinkins, what is it that you're doing to keep yourself entertained during this unusual time? Boys, anything? I see this marbles racing video has gone kind of viral, isn't it, Pat?
No, I was just thinking Tony's just going buying random pasta. That's how he's entertaining himself. But
no, I've actually got a good one for this. So I've sort of in the evenings found a sort of new trash TV to keep myself busy. It's Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, delving back into
is
that.
It the American version? Because
I've been watching the British one.
The American
now,
one's hilarious because they don't get his crossover sort of abuse slash banter.
They all cry.
Chef Ramsay, they always say, Chef Ramsay, you're being too mean.
Well, I like the UK one, which is sort of normal and a little bit sort of sedate. And then the American one, like the intro credits are like two knives, like going, Chef Ramsay, Kitchen Nightmares. It's like completely dramatic, and the whole thing is just like on speed, isn't it? It's just mad.
The editing,
So that's the one which you enjoyed so far.
To be honest, it was probably the first one I watched. It was the one. It was based in Sheffield because actually I used to live in Sheffield, so I knew where this place was.
Okay.
And it was with just the owner was obsessed with music, and the chef and him were best mates, but they fell out. And then suddenly, when Ramsay went in there, the chef just turned and he started swearing like Ramsay. It's almost like he Ramsay brings out this in the people that have been bottling up for 10 years.
Yeah.
He finally breaks them.
Yeah.
You watch programs like that and you think, how do people get in such a state? There's some, certainly the ones in America when there's some like little hidden Rust Belt town or something, yeah. And it'll be like some crazy old lady who's got like Russian dolls on every single shelf and every single surface, and she's like, I don't understand why people don't want to come to my restaurant. It's creepy. Yeah. It's not been updated since the 60s or something, but these places obviously survive somehow. Connor, how are you keeping yourself entertained? Have you resorted to marble racing?
Not quite yet. Although I might get that set up in the garden. Actually, that could work. I've got a bit of a slope as well,
yeah,
so that
it was quite good,
work
wasn't it?
In my garden, actually. No, Football Manager, I think, is the name of the major.
I'll take a day off, well, mate.
What year are you into
as,
now?
As Daniel Farker will tell you, you can't take a day off when you're trying to take a team to survival. Yeah. You know?
It's 24/7.
Exactly. I mean, immediately now, thinking, who can I sign for the summer?
Well, the question is, are you playing the diamond? That's what we want to know.
No, not quite. I've had to sort of go a bit Sam Allardyce, because I took over at Reading halfway through a season. They were sort of in the bottom three. I've lifted them out of it, so we're now into the summer, and I'm sort of in recruitment mode at the moment, so just trying to get the squad as good as I can, probably for a championship playoff push.
Are you self-funding, or...?
I did make the controversial decision to sort of release about 9 players. So Chris Gunter, Gareth McCleary, all gone. So that was quite brutal. I did essentially.
I was just going to say that you took a page out of the Weber playbook there, Connor.
Yeah, I did, and I've gone into some obscure European leagues. So I think I signed someone from the Romanian second division a couple of nights ago. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, just preparing for a new season actually at the moment. So that's how I'm keeping myself busy.
For me, it is the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David, if none of you have ever seen it, creator of Seinfeld. I think it's season 10. It's sort of been brought back, but it's been absolute gold. If you haven't seen it before, it's a very unique sort of sense of humour in a way. And he is just, it's like grumpy old men, but everything winds him up. And at the start of each episode, it's almost slapstick, because you can kind of see where it's going. It's like, oh no, he's going to do that. He's going to offend her. He's going to do this wrong. He just goes through life getting everything wrong, essentially. And it's really funny. He's ridiculous. But for fans who have seen it, it's pretty, pretty, pretty good. And if you watched it, you will get that reference. So yeah, that's one to binge on. Pad, what, just finally.
Well, I mean, if you're looking beyond Salvage Hunters on Quest, then you need to have a word with yourself.
Salvage Hunters.
You need to have a word with yourself. Yeah, every night. What's his name? Can't even think of the guy's name now. It's gonna craze me now.
You call yourself a fan?
Well, quick Google.
I wouldn't say I was a fan, but basically we all know the premise. I'm sure you might have stumbled across it as you moved on to the next channel. He's basically this antique dealer based in North Wales who goes around the country looking. But what I like is he clearly knows what...
Drew Pritchard,
that's it. Good man. He knows what he's doing, and he basically turns up, and these are poor unsuspecting characters who've had a £6,000 mahogany table underneath a load of rubbish at the bottom of the garden. He goes down there and I'll give you £250 for it, quid. And they think they're getting the bargain of the century. And then at the end, it'll say like what he paid for it and then what he sold it for, and his markup is like ridiculous. So I kind of like, maybe it's my, sort of negative part of my personality. I quite like him having people over. It kind of appeals to me. So without them even knowing, it's the beauty of it is they don't even know. They think they're getting a good deal because they're thinking, oh, well, this was just at the bottom of my tip or whatever. And I'm getting a couple of hundred quid from it. And then he knows full well that it's an antique piece of furniture and can get about 4 figures for it. So, yeah, it's on every night. If anybody wants to find it, Quest, about 7 o'clock. And I think you can watch it on Quest Plus One, which occasionally I've done that.
Oh, they're giving you a
commission? No, not at all. No.
Yeah.
It's just a dick.
It sounds, Quest like, sounds like the Antique Roadshow for pessimists.
Yeah.
So rather than being pleased for people that they've got, their long-lost family heirloom has been valued at 20 grand, you like seeing them done over.
Yeah, basically. It's just, but it's the interplay when you're like they're having this sort of a bartering kind of phase, and if you've watched it often enough, you know when he's playing them basically. So he'll go, that needs a lot of work doing to it. This is wrong with it. That's wrong with it. Can't really. There's not much markup in it for me. I'll give you X, and then they snap his hand off, and he's basically played them. So I kind of Yeah.
So he's basically lied.
Well, he would say that.
I mean, that kind of probably relates to football transfer business, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
You know, we'll give you X amount for Byron, you know, and then they're laughing once he's in the
That's
door.
Possibly. I can see where you're going with that, TT. Yeah, yeah. So maybe what we need is, to be fair, Webber probably knows him because he's from North Wales, isn't he? So I might, next time I speak to Stuart Webber, I might mention if he knows Drew Pritchard, because...
He'll probably get you a signed picture.
Well, yeah, even better. Trust me, if he was in Norwich's recruitment pool, they definitely wouldn't be getting had over for any players. There'd be no, dare I say, Ricky Van Wolfswinkel type, Stephen Naismith type deals happening with Drew Pritchard in the building.
You've reminded me of an amazing show I used to watch when I was younger called Scrap Heap Challenge.
Oh, I've heard of it. Yeah. Scrap Heap.
That's probably on Quest as well.
Yeah.
This is such an insight into personalities.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't. I mean, if we got into Aussie Gold Hunters, then we'd be here another hour. So we'll move on. We'll leave that till the next week's one.
Well, Dave, you said your mum's stranded in Florida. That's pretty.
Yeah,
pretty
it could be worse, couldn't it?
Yeah,
they're lucky enough. They've got a place in Florida, so they were over there, and at the time they thought they'd be all right getting back. But obviously, things have accelerated quite quickly, haven't they? So, in reality, I've been speaking to my mum quite a lot. She's very anxious and wants to get home, mainly because of my younger brother, who is for those who read my column on Saturday, is on immunosuppressed medication, so we've got to be very careful with him. He very much falls into the vulnerable category of the whole COVID-19 stuff. So in reality, he's probably going to end up staying with me for a while, or we might be uber careful, and he'll sort of live at home as he normally does at my mum and stepdad's, and I'll go in and out, and sort of obviously keeping the social distancing as we all know. But he can't be on his own, so they're supposed to get home. They were supposed to be flying home on Monday, but they currently don't know. But I'm sure there's loads of Brits over in America, so I think we are expecting that she'll be all right. But as much as they're sat around the pool in sort of 30 degree weather, actually I think that there's a bit of a tinge of guilt and anxiety for them. So you know, whenever you've been on a long holiday, there's always as Brits we reach that point, don't we, where it's like, I just want to get home and have a cup of tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly when your family are potentially in a little bit of danger. So strange times indeed. Right, well, thanks for the sort of digital meetup, fellas. We'll have to do this again at some point, I'm sure we will. Best of luck with persevering with the sports stuff. I'm now going to go and find out how Norfolk's care homes are dealing with coronavirus.
Yeah. And Connor's about to go take Reading into a brand new season.
Well, no, I've probably got to put that on ice. I've got a few things to do there, sadly. So the Medeski will have to wait. I'm afraid.
And I'm off to see if Salvage Hunters is on at lunchtime. Yeah. On that note,
okey-doke. I might get in the kitchen then.
Well, thank you very much for listening. Hope that at least provided a little bit of comfort, to maybe a little bit of familiarity in what is a strange time. We will catch up with you guys next week. Of course, anything that's going on with Norwich City, any updates on the football season, pinkton.com is the place to be. We'll keep you up to date as best we can, and we will catch up with you very soon.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.